Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Raquel Pennington era, Coast to Coast Combat Hour. I'm your host, Matthew Hawkins, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Ed Carbajal. Ed, we're like 5 days into the, well, 4 days into the Pennington. No, we're only on Tuesday now, so we're 3 days into the Pennington era. How's it going?
Good, man. I mean, I'm glad you said that because we were both kind of like, it's good that we eat a little bit of crow or whatever on her winning, because we both picked against her and she won a decision. But it's a strange time in the UFC when it comes with what's going on with the titles that were on the line with that card, which we're gonna get into eventually. But before we move ahead, there's some news that we should talk about, because we discussed it last week, and there's a couple of things I want to. There's an update to the PFL versus Bellator card that'll be like the highlight pay per view of next month. They're doing a press conference tomorrow on the East Coast time, 2 p.m. in Florida. Hopefully, we'll get more details on that. But our boy Nolan King put out the news that Magomed Kirov, and I know we keep messing up the Magomed names, but he's out, and Ray Cooper III is in to face Jason Jackson. I just shared a video with Jason Jackson finding out, talking already throwing shade at Ray Cooper for not making weight. And I think it's going to be at a catch weight, but we'll get confirmation of all that stuff tomorrow at the press conference. But sucks that this first their first big pay-per-view that kind of stirred a lot of pots with it within the sport. You know, kind of something new and exciting to look forward to that's outside of the wash, rinse, repeat of the UFC is already getting a little messed up. And then I wanted to share something else too, because a good question that I'm going to start messaging the other Bellator fighters that I know, because I think we just need to know. And I'm not going to like say names or anything. I mean, most people can probably guess, but I want to find out. Nick Baldwin posted something. He shared that Josh Hill, who was a Bellator fighter, went 4-3 in Bellator, posted on his social media that he kind of like got left hanging, and it doesn't look like they're just taking all the Bellator fighters. And he said he was a free agent. So it's like, I mean, I know there's a lot of like Don Davis interviews with Ariel Helwani, which it's hard for me to sit through. I want to hear what Don Davis has to say, but I don't want to hear what Ariel Helwani has to say or the way he asks questions. But I'm just like how much money are they putting? Are they only putting money into the name fighters from Bellator and everyone else is getting left in the lurch? Because that kind of sucks. There's a lot of good fighters. There's a lot of good fighters on that roster that they could do stuff with. So I'm just curious as to where they're headed. But hopefully somebody asks that question tomorrow. I do have a Zoom link to jump into that press conference, but I'm not going to be able to because of the time of day that they're doing it.
I don't think you'd get an honest answer to that question at this point right now anyway. Yeah. But I got to say, I don't hate it. I hate it that these guys are kind of in limbo, but I don't hate that they could become free agents. It brings up what we talked about. I don't, you know, I want this to work, but I'm not so sure this is going to work with Bellator PFL thing. Mm. Obviously, they're not going to be able to absorb the huge roster that Bellator had. I just don't, I mean, they, and I don't really want them to either. I don't want a mega rostered organization. It all it does is lead to a bunch of fights that don't mean anything. You know, so I don't mind if these guys become free agents and they can go fight for, you know, Ryzen or you know, Titan main event or do whatever, you know, I mean, at least they get a chance to actually have their name put out there and they're not just buried on some random prelim in the Middle East or, you know, something like that. And I'd rather PFL really just take the names from Bellator and have them fight the names from PFL and let that be like a super fight organization. And they said they're going to have 8 Bellator events, which in itself isn't enough. Even if there's 15 fights in event, what are we looking at? 120 fights. That's 240. If guys aren't repeat, if I only fighting one time, that's 240 fighters. I mean, I don't know the exact number of the Bellator roster, but I mean, just doing the math on it, there's no way they'd be able to keep really. I can't even imagine them keeping much more than, you know, say 120 fighters. And that might be a lot still. and you just make them free agents and you sign them when you need them. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world than seeing Limbo, and especially when there's a crossover. I mean, we saw
it's only bad if they're waiting for, you know, because I mean, if that's their only means of income, then it's like, then you know, they start losing sponsors and stuff if they feel locked in and they can't, you know, pitch themselves to anyone else. I mean, it looks like Josh Hill took it upon himself to just say, "Look, I don't want to sit around anymore. I'm wondering how many fighters are left in that."
I think probably a lot. Their management's got to know. I think it's probably maybe they had a moment where there might be a small window where it's, you know, maybe renegotiate time or something. I wouldn't be surprised if there was something like that. You know, in a renegotiate, like everybody's released, but we have the right to re-sign you under our terms and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We're going to see how this first one goes down. Like I said, middle of the day pay-per-view in the Middle East.
I mean, we're talking about, you mentioned the shows that they're going to, that Don Davis announced that he was going to do. Two of them are supposed to be U.S. shows. I'm wondering if they're going to let us know, how soon they're going to let us know when and where. I mean, I would imagine one's going to be out in your neck of the woods just because.
I would say either San Jose or L.A., and then I'd say Chicago. Those seems to be their strongest. I mean, you had Connecticut. You do have Connecticut. I just don't know if you have the big. I guess Mohegan Sun is a big arena, though. It holds, what, 12,000?
It's not a bad venue. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, anymore. Okay. So, I mean, you have that available. I just don't know what. I know Chicago. It just depends on who they got fighting for them. You know, we forget, like, so quick, we're talking Jason Jackson. I mean, just one fight ago, we were talking about Amosov being an undefeated just animal. So where's he go?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd almost rather see a rematch of that fight than Ray Cooper. Ray Cooper's lost 2 of 3. He fought middleweight his last fight and got crushed by Derek Brunson. I don't even understand. I mean, I'd rather give that fight to Aaron Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. If they're going to do a catchweight at 182, you know, I mean, it's a terrible showcase for the 170-pound division. That was a strong division in Bellator for a long time. The 170-pound class was what carried Bellator. The Lima, the Daly, the MVP, the, you know, all those guys. That was the division for Bellator. So to see that kind of get ruined in its first chance to have a fight with PFL seems kind of lame to me. Also, you got their champ fighting a guy who's been fighting at 185 pounds recently. I mean, I think Jason Jackson wins that fight because I think he's a much better MMA fighter, but you're going to be in there with a big slugger dude who's probably going to have weight on you, you know, and have been used to fighting at that. So I don't know. I just don't like the fight. I don't like that fight in particular. I mean, on paper, it's not a terrible fight. It's probably going to be a really good fight. It just sucks that that's what Jason Jackson got when everybody else is basically fighting.
Well, I mean, plus you got to remember too. It's Bellator fighters with the PFL kind of running the show. So of course they're going to get, despite the weight misses and everything else that's happened, Cooper's been a name for PFL since they started this whole their whole seasonal format. So I'm not surprised that's who they threw in there, you know, to fill in. And it looks like, Jackson's just doing it. The people that are on this card are probably getting paid all right. So Jackson's. The video I just saw looks like he just wants to fight anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I don't think he cares. I don't think he probably cares that much. He's going to get paid, like you said. And I don't know about all those other fighters. I mean, because there's a lot of guys. Amosov, Jeffrey, you mentioned Hill. I mean, Patricky Pitbull. I mean, you got guys that are, you know, relatives of guys that are fighting on the card coming up. So you wonder what's going to happen, but I wouldn't mind. I mean, if you just told me tomorrow that there was like 50 good free agents available, it wouldn't suck to have kind of a bidding war where those guys can kind of spread out. Some go to the UFC, some maybe stay with PFL, and then some go to Japan or, you know, I don't think it would be terrible for other organizations, even BKFC and some of those other ones. Cause you open that up and I think that does, you know, get you there. So
one thing, I mean, this is a good way to segue into to the UFC 297. You know, after the main event of UFC 297, Johnny Eblen, who's on this card, pretty much flat out said, he beats DDP easy, and he beats Strickland and DDP pretty easy, in my opinion. Just because from what I've seen out of all three fighters, and I'm just like, DDP, I I don't know why I call him DDP. I promised myself I'd never call him the Drakus Duplessis, because there's only one DDP, and that's Diamond Dallas Page. But Drakus Duplessis, I mean, you know, last week we talked about how him winning would be good for the UFC's future plan and the fact that it went to the decision and stuff. I mean, I know you watched the fight more closely, I'll say, than I did. It seems like no one's happy with the decisions that came out of the 297 card. And I wish if Eblen wasn't locked into this contract, I'm pretty sure UFC would want to scoop him right up, because, I mean, he's what, 14-0, undefeated, and holds a title that people know his name. I mean, the dude definitely is in the prime of his career right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he walks through those guys. I do think he could be I'd bet him to win both of those fights based off what I've seen, but mm-hmm. he hasn't fought in the UFC. I mean, Duplessis handled Robert Whittaker and then picked up a win here. So, you know, you don't want to shoot him short just because they're kind of, you know, neither of these guys are the most exciting fighters. I think that's kind of what you get spoiled.
Yeah.
When you get a decade of Anderson Silva, and then you get a half a decade of Adesanya, and
yeah.
You know what I mean? And then we kind of get normal guys. And I think that's what's, you know, we're old school. So we're kind of like the superheroes were always the champions. The Vanderlei Silvas, the guys that kind of had some kind of character or, you know, whereas now it's like, you know, we all love Frankie Edgar, but we don't want Frankie Edgar in every division. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like he's who he is because he's who he is. He's a plain, hardworking American dude from Jersey who is a world champion, you know? And, you know, it goes like Dan Henderson. You only want so many, you know, so many Dan Hendersons, you know, you need the Vanderleys, you need the Shoguns, you need the Rampage Jacksons, you need the whole gambit of guys to really, I think, get the creativity and the excitement going. And right now I think it's kind of at a down point. I think the Duplessis, and I think the him against Adesanya obviously has a backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't know how dirty that'll get, but it is a fight that at least has a story that can sell and has potential. Strickland, I think, is going to always just kind of just, you know, I don't know what the word, not to dumb you down, but just kind of make it grimy. You know what I mean? It just, his style, especially now with his peekaboo style, I think it's just going to make it where the only way you're really going to beat him is probably landing a huge punch like Bahia did, or just playing it smart and outpointing him, you know, cause his defense is there now. And he didn't have that style against Bahia. So who knows how that would go in a rematch, you know, but they're talking rematch. They're not talking rematch, but it seems like a lot of people want the rematch. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's because Strickland he's miraculously picked up a huge fan base. Yeah. So that's the other kind of fascinating thing about this. I mean, I find him amusing. I like that he speaks his mind. I'm not someone that, you know, it is weird. It's weird how hyped the fight is getting. People are talking like this was Robbie Lawler, Rory McDonald, and it wasn't.
No,
it was like a mediocre fight. Like,
yeah. So
it's funny that the fan base has really kind of elevated it to like, oh man, it was such a war he lost, and now like 65% of people want a rematch. Is a little weird to me, but
yeah.
You know, I don't think the UFC will do it either. I think
no. There were, I mean, at the post fight press conference, Dana White was already kind of like, yeah, rematch. These guys will see each other again, but not anytime soon, and not in so many words. But that's pretty much what he hinted at again. And it's because of what I said last week. You know, they have these plans for Africa, South Africa, and there's fighters. You know, like him and Adesanya are probably the fight that they want to make to go there and sell out whatever arena they can get. You know what I mean?
Yeah, see, but I won't be surprised if they try to force that on like 300 and speed it up and just do it in Vegas and really drop the ball on that opportunity. You know, that's what you just I feel like it's perfectly set up for Adesanya to get his title back, and then for Cosmat to come in at the end of the year and fight Adesanya in a mega super fight where you really would have kind of two superhero-esque character fighters. You know, you'd have an undefeated guy against a guy who ran that division for a long time and can kick your head off or punch your head off. You know what I mean? So there is some potential, but I think right now we're just kind of in a stagnant. You know, we mentioned Pennington winning. Congratulations to her. I mean, the grind is real for somebody that's been around fighting for as long as she has. So props to her. I don't even really know what to compare it to. I mean, I guess maybe Bisping winning the title. Whereas it was somebody who, like, you just never, I mean, I didn't. Maybe a bunch of
no, people. No, we didn't. Yeah, we didn't at all.
Pennington was going to be this champ, but I just, you know, I always thought she was just going to kind of be second fiddle to everybody she kind of
fought. Here's a funny thing, though, that, you know, with Amanda Nunes in the crowd watching, then they talk to her after the fact, and she hints at maybe wanting to come back to fighting. I'm like, okay, you know, are you just going to come back because of the way things are? And you see these, there's more fights of opponents that it seems like you can beat. But I mean, we're in a weird time in MMA where it's like, I mean, you look at the people that won, especially on this card that weren't supposed to technically win. And we're going to get to the undercard, cause I thought the undercard was awesome, especially the fight pass prelims. But, you know, there's fighters that they set up, that it seemed like they were setting them up to lose, and then they come back and win. It's a weird time in MMA. I don't know if Nunes really wants to come back. And like you said, I mean, talking about Pennington on the grind, she probably, she's not whatever we all thought she was. She's obviously not that, cause she pulled off a victory, and now she's holding the belt, and you and I didn't see that coming.
No. I think with Nunes, it's ego. And it's not a knock on her. I think you have to have an ego like that to be where they're at in life and stuff. But I think when she starts seeing the spotlight on another girl in her weight class, that she instantly kind of wanted to show up and get her name out there and get her name on the news about maybe coming back and stuff. Yeah. Listen, I don't see anybody. She already beat Pennington in one of the lowest selling pay-per-views in UFC history. I think it sold like 100,000 paper, like as going back to like UFC 40, kind of numbers. When they sold, I think it was 213 might have been the number. But
here's the thing about Nunes, just because that clip got out there, and of course Cyborg saw it. You know, Cyborg wanted that rematch with Nunes. I mean, if Nunes is retired, technically she's available.
Yeah, but no, because they retire while still under contract. So the UFC holds their rights. What needs to happen? Here's what needs to happen. And the only fight that I really care about Nunes fighting, I'd like to see Cyborg fight Kyla Harrison. I'd like to see her knock her block off. And then I'd like to see PFL let her out of her contract so that Nunes and Cyborg can have a double retirement fight.
Yeah, that would be good.
To headline maybe like International Fight Week next year. You know what I mean? And then it just be a double retirement fight. That's the only fight that I'd like to see. Because other than that, who's Nunes going to fight? I mean, I can watch her win 100 fights in a row, but what's she going to fight Juliana Pena over and over again? I mean, that's really the only, you know, I don't want to watch her fight Pennington. She's going to go there, beat Pennington, and then what? Fight Holly Holm again? I mean, the division just hasn't grown. And unfortunately, when you have back-to-back dominant champions like you had with Nunes and Rousey, you basically destroy everybody. Those two went through and wrecked shop on every top 10 female fighter in that division's history. So I mean, they all seem like they're less, you know, not really relevant because they've all been beat by, you know, these people. So I mean, Pennington and Payne, Juliana Pena has a little bit of a story going back to Tough. So that's there. That's probably the fight to make, you know, as a co-main event to the next card in Canada. But I don't know. It's just an interesting time in the UFC all around. We don't know where we're at with Conor McGregor. We don't know where the UFC 300 is in April. I mean, tickets went on sale for $299 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So you know that they need to get that announcement out here. I would say within the next 2 weeks. To get tickets on sale, to have a proper couple months to sell them and really hype
up. Like you said, hype it up, because I there's nothing right now. I'm looking, well, who's on there? I mean, the good Gaethje.
There's a lot of names. There's a lot of names and a lot of fun fights, but you don't have a main event yet.
Yeah, you don't have that fight that. I mean, the Gaethje Holloway fight. I mean, you guys threw that out with the BMF title, and it's just like, And then they're talking about the Weili Zhang and Yan Xionan.
You don't have one you're going to look back and go, that was 300.
That's not, you don't have one that says, I need to get there and watch it. Or I need to see, like leave me alone that Saturday, because this is like none of those fights. I am a Gaethje fan, but the fight with Max Holloway, we already talked about it. But I'm just like, I mean, Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt's a fun fight. Miller, Bobby Green's a fun fight. They're all fun fights, but it's not making me, I'm not licking my chops yet to see it, you know?
No, it seems like it's just kind of stuff that was just thrown up against a wall and that's the fights they came up with, you know? Yeah. And that's not always terrible, but like I said, you either have to have a circus fight or you have to have a really banger of a main event there. But maybe the UFC, we say that, I mean, you know,
Brock Lesnar, Daniel Cormier.
You do Aspinall, Brock Lesnar. You know, none of the other guys would fight Brock. Yeah. Jones talked about fighting Brock and dodged him for fucking 6 years. Mm-hmm. Cormier talked about fighting him and just decided to fight Stipe 6 times in a row. Yeah. You know, seriously. So that would be, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but you could do it, and it would also make a star out of Aspinall if he won. I mean, that's what the UFC seems to forget, is like there's certain fights that catapult people, you know, that catapult them into different levels, and it's who they beat. But you don't want to just, you know, they like to do the old guy against the new guard, and really, I mean, that's what that would be. Don't get me wrong, but Lesnar is not really relevant. You're just building off of a Lesnar name, not so much his legacy, in the UFC. But I don't know. It's interesting time. 298 does look like a good card, so I'm going. I don't really want to talk too much about it until we get closer because of my ability to curse fight cards up and down. Yeah. But I will say Mackenzie Dern is stepping in for Tatiana Suarez versus Amanda Lemos. You know, Suarez can't get out of her way injury-wise, it seems like. I don't know what the problem is here, but it's a shame that we might be watching a championship career just kind of slide away, you know, year after year. It just seems like, you know, I know she got fired a couple times last year, but seems like we've missed a lot of opportunities with her in the cage. So,
but back to 297. I mean, the undercard, I mean, there were so many fights that I thought were great. I do have to say, I mean, somebody brought up the Mosvar Ivalev versus Arnold Allen fight to Dana White in the post fight press conference, and he like knocked the fight, said talking about how it took the air out of the arena or whatever. And that made me scratch my head, because I was like, did I watch? Is there something that I missed? Because if there was fights that took the air out of the arena, we already kind of talked about them. And I'm just kind of like I thought that fight was, like, I was actually, even though he lost, I was super impressed with Arnold Allen's, the Granby rolls he was doing just to get out of trying to get out of the grappling exchanges. I found the fight to be entertaining. I didn't think it sucked. I mean, the only thing the only thing that folks were kind of like not knocking, but it wasn't the best performance from Ivalev, but it was kind of like, now he knows what he has to do. Like, now he's at that level in the UFC where it's like, okay, what you've been doing got you here. Now you got to evolve a little more to keep up with these guys. Cause Allen didn't make it. He won a decision, but he didn't make it easy for him.
No, I didn't have a problem with the fight. I thought it was just competitive. Yeah,
that's why I was on the card.
Yeah. It was just Dana White taking a shot at somebody. You know, he felt like that was his target. I don't really know what that was about. But, you know, we see worse fights than that on every single main card, pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, 9 out of 10 events.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but there was like some come from behind victories that we got to mention on the card too. I mean, obviously the Neil Magny one, because it seemed like they were setting up Mike Malott up to just, you know, it's these fights when they match these up and coming younger guys against somebody that's been in the UFC for a while, you always look at it like they announced Frankie Edgar's Hall of Fame thing, and I tweeted about when they match him against Yair Rodriguez. It's always that type of matchup, you think, and I always love it when the veteran guy stops him in his tracks, which there's a moment where it looked like Malott was, you know, doing something, and then Neil Magny let you know he's not in the he hasn't been in the UFC this long for no reason. He got a third round TKO, so I love that. I love the Chris Curtis's story is another fight too that's one that's worth mentioning, because you know, he retired what, like three times when he was in the PFL?
He had the quickest retirement in the history of MMA when he retired and then fought later that night.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then he like lost and then retired again. And then he came
to the UFC and he's been on a nice little run now. I mean, he's main carding pay-per-views, which is great. And he seems to be a good guy. So, yeah, no, it's, you know, it was like a 6.5 on a pay-per-view scale for me, you know, nothing great, but you know, horribly terrible, but
the catchweight, it was supposed to be flyweight, but Jimmy Flick versus Malcolm Gordon. That fight, I mean, I don't know. People were booing Jimmy Flick. I mean, the fact that he was on the fight pass prelims, I get it. I know he's another one that retired and came back. So I get why the card placement and everything, but I mean, that fight was so fun, so much fun to watch. I mean, I know Malcolm Gordon said he's retired after losing, I guess because of the weight miss and then losing by submission. But I mean, because I think it was Cormier said during the fight, you know, he was like, why is he forcing? He's forcing grappling exchanges with a really dangerous guy. And if you want to see somebody that uses the sneakiest counter, like grappling in MMA, it's Jimmy Flick. I actually I knew he was going to win by some sort of choke. So when he won by the choke that he got, I was just like, man, I don't know who was sleeping on him. I don't know what the odds were leading into it, but like between him and Neil Magny, I was like, man, I should have done some sort of underdog parlay with these guys because it was a great fight. I love the undercard, especially the three subs, obviously could beat a jiu-jitsu guy, but those two fights in particular, I wanted to mention because those were the fight and the Evil Ev one because Dana White, I don't know what he was smoking. I don't know if the cold got to him in Canada or what the deal was because he was like, I think he was waiting to get baited for these LGBTQ arguments and shit that came up. So because he knew that guy was there, that reporter was there, and he was just waiting for it to happen. It seemed like if you watch it, you can see he's kind of like. Even when the guy that didn't do that asks a question, he brings it up a little bit, and it's like, you know, that's been a highlight of the press conference. But if you watch the whole thing, it's almost as if he was waiting for somebody to try to drag him into that whole mess of freedom of speech and all that.
Yeah, no, it's I did catch some of that where you could tell he was kind of. He was waiting for the shots to come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's see. Looking at the looking ahead here, we don't have a UFC this weekend, but we do have bare knuckle fighting coming back.
Free
BKFC, free on YouTube, free on the app. YouTube will have commercials, I believe, or ads and. Yep, I believe will not. But easy way to watch BKFC this weekend. It is also the debut of their actually, it's Prospect Series 3. I must have missed the other ones. So with that said, Donald Sanchez, Noah Cutter, I've seen both of them compete multiple times. Good main event. Eric Dodson, the brother of John Dodson, makes another appearance. And I noticed the debuting Juan Adams, formerly of the UFC and PFL and Fury and a bunch of other stuff. He makes his debut, big man. But I'll be interested to see how he takes that punch. Big men don't always, you know, Rothwell's thrived. Hardy didn't, you know, so it'll be interesting. Also Taylor Starling versus Jenny, formerly known as Jenny Savage, is now Jenny Kalisis, Clacius. I'm not really sure how to pronounce it, but that's early prelim. That should be a good fight as well. I'm not sure the order of the bouts actually, but that should be a really good female bout. Both of those women have been known to bleed and cut their opponents, so that should be fun to watch.
Yeah, there's also ONE Championship's going to have a pretty busy weekend. You know, they do something every Friday, so they have a card in Bangkok, but they're also in Tokyo. On not this weekend, I'm sorry, next week, the 28th, Superlek versus Takeru, but the undercard is, which, I mean, because Sexy Yama's on that card, so that's going to be a fun one.
Aoki and Northcutt.
Yeah, we should probably Gary Tonin against Martin Nguyen. We should probably do like a full one card on that. But that's just looking ahead. I mean, there's stuff to keep your eye on this month as we move into February. But yeah, the BKFC, I saw that before we were talking about it before we started recording, and I'm excited that it's free on almost anywhere you can stream. It'll be on Amazon. It'll be on YouTube. It'll be on Roku. So
on everything.
Yeah.
BKFC Prospect Series. Find it Saturday night. Looks like it's a 9 p.m. Eastern start time. Like I said, talk about cards that are always entertaining. I have yet to run into a boring BKFC fight card. So I think that's going to wrap us up. Fans can follow the show at Combat Hour on Twitter, Coast to Coast Combat Hour on Instagram. Follow me, Matthew Hawkins, at MMAHawk21 on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Ed at Carbazol on Twitter, Carbeerzol on Instagram, and Oldhead Carb on Twitch. Thanks for listening, everyone, and enjoy the fights this weekend.
Peace.